Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Oh yes, you know that music means it's time for DLC, your downloadable content for the week. DLC delivered the way it's meant to be, absolutely free. And that's thanks to our sponsor this week, New Relic. They make that possible. Give the show to you completely free. DLC, of course, the show all about gaming in its many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. Games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I am your host, Jeff Cannata, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, slash nemesis, slash friend, or I'm trying out this one this week, Kohomna End. No? All right. The man who has vowed to only play Titanfall if it's released on the Vita, Christian Spicer.
Yeah. Hello, hey, Chris. Good to be here. Hey, everybody. And thanks to everybody that left iTunes reviews. I have this dream. It's not a noble or a crazy world-defining dream, but I have this dream of getting 1,000 iTunes reviews for this show. That's my dream, and hopefully it'll become a reality. But no, people have been great. I really like the people that say really positive things and only give us a 3-star review. What are you doing? And Jeff,
Christian,
one of these
begging
weeks,
for reviews.
No, I'm just being honest up front. One of these weeks, I'm not going to be here, and I want your intro to be joined by my co-host slash friend slash nemesis slash slash. This is Slash, ladies and gentlemen, and Slash is a guest on the show.
Do you think we can get Slash to be on the show with us? He never talks. He would just only comment using guitar riffs. That would be rad.
I mean, Slash's snake pit was a thing, so I think you can kind of get him to do about anything.
Well, happy Titanfall Eve to you, Christian, but we will not be talking about Titanfall this week. No, that will be next week. Of course, DLC stands for Downloadable Kanata, Downloadable Christian, but this week, DLC also means dungarees, lily pads, and cartoons, because we've got Mr. Frog Pants himself, the illustrator, podcaster, cartoonist, Mr. Scott Johnson. You know him from the awesome Extra Life comic strip, his numerous web shows like The Instance and like so many more. You're doing 1,000 shows, Scott.
Eight of them to be exact. But yes, the Instance, the Final Score, those are probably the most pertinent to an audience like this. But thanks for having me, man. I'm thrilled to be here.
I'm thrilled to have you, a longtime buddy and big fan of what you do, so I'm glad to have you here. We got a lot to talk about. Some huge news this week. We've got week two of our March Madness, where we are now moving into the Spicer division of our bracket. Hopefully everybody has been voting. You can go to jeffcanada.com if you're listening live right now and get your votes in before we start determining the winners. jeffcanada.com, and scroll down to the post for the DLC March Madness. You can go vote. We've got hundreds and hundreds of votes all week long. And if you want to, if you're just listening to this late and you want to vote for next week's brackets, you can still do that. You'll see a post there at jeffcanada.com with two N's and one T. Well, you know, of course, we got to start every show with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week, of course, the segment where we try to convince one another of what the most important story is of the week. And you can participate. You can contribute. We take Story of the Week submissions all week long using hashtag DLCSOTW. That's DLC Story of the Week on Twitter. So we've got a lot of contributions this week. This is a big week of news.
Yeah, but after last week, a slowish news week. This is crazy. Yeah.
So, Scott, I'm very curious what you think the most important, most interesting, most exciting story of the week was this week.
Oh man! Well, aside the fact that Titanfall is a huge deal and we are on the eve of it, and I wish all video game news was about the games themselves. Sometimes, the biggest news is this Jack Trenton leaving Sony deal, and I feel like it's a little bit weird because Sony's been on this roll, right? They've come from, I wouldn't say underdog in the last generation, but they certainly kind of had their lunch handed to them by Microsoft in this particular region. They did a little bit better overseas, but PS3 in the end performed well and everybody kind of ended out a little bit equal if you went worldwide by the numbers. But Sony didn't like that position. They felt it was a little subservient and they were going to change things. And so it's been an exciting thing to watch them evolve and change and kind of watch Japan hand the reins of design decisions and sort of business decisions to other parts of the company and other parts of the world to understand their markets better. And all this stuff's very exciting. PS4 comes out strong. Everybody's excited about it. They completely turned the tables on Microsoft when it came to message, and they've sold more consoles to this point. All those things seem to be going really well. You'd think this would be time for Jack to just be on, you know, his big pile of excitement with his guns in hand, excited to take on the next couple of years. And no, he's stepping down, which is a little bit weird. It's almost like, I mean, I prefer to think that he brought them finally to where they needed to be for a new generation. It looks like a successful launch to this point. There's a lot to prove yet, and it's early, but still, it feels pretty good. It's better than they've been in a position for a while. And now he can kind of just go away and you know, do something else. But I feel like it's a big loss to Sony. He's a great face, at least on the American side, and I'm going to miss seeing him on stage.
Yeah, I think that's where most gamers recognize Jack from, is the guy who steps out in front at the E3 press conference every year and starts things off. He is the front face of SCEA and has been for 19 years. That's a long time. Well, I don't think he was actually in that position that whole time, but it's a long career to stay with Sony. He came out with a statement on the Sony blog saying that it was a mutual agreement between himself and SCEA, but it did seem a little, he said, you know, he was saddened to admit that. This story was submitted by a listener at BrandMartin06, who agrees that this was the most important story of the week. I think it is. I don't really know what the ramifications are going to be quite yet. As you say, Sony seems to be in good hands, and they seem to be chugging along pretty well front of this new generation. They're definitely, I guess this week we also had the news that they'd broken 6 million in sales, which is pretty darn good this fast. Christian, what do you think about Jack Tretton stepping down? Big deal?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is a big deal, especially with the momentum they had. I mean, the way they worded it right is Sony said it was an agreement reached by both Trent and the company to not renew his contract. Like, Yes, I think at some point that is mutual, but that's the kind of thing where, hey, I want, you know, $10 million. Nope. Okay. Well, we agree, right? I mean, this doesn't seem like, you'd think that I could foresee an instance where this is a type of place where it's the perfect time for him to step down, right? I mean, he righted this ship. He had a great E3 last year. Sales for the PS4 have been super strong. And if he had something new and exciting that he wanted to do, excuse me, you know, this would be a great time to do it. This, you know, you won the World Series, you won the Super Bowl, and now you go pursue your passion and you go sailing or whatever.
Which is going to Disneyland. That's
obviously Disneyland. That's not what this feels like. I think this is a very big story and will have probably the biggest ramifications potentially for the industry of the news this week. But I don't think it's the story of the week.
Well, it's interesting. There are a couple of big high-profile departures this week. We also had Amy Hennig. I don't know if that was going to be your story of the week, but Amy Hennig leaving Naughty Dog is a pretty big deal as well. And this was another one of those where it wasn't quite clear why this person was leaving. Very successful studio, very successful series. She is inextricably tied with Uncharted, as is said to be a large part of why Uncharted is as good as it is. And we see in all those behind the scenes videos of the directing of the cutscenes and all the motion capture stuff, how hands-on and how involved Amy Hennig is. And then we had this bizarre statement, it was IGN that reported early on that she was leaving and kind of implied, well, didn't imply, they flat out said that she was forced out potentially by the guys in charge of the Last of Us series, who were then, there's some sort of animosity there, and she was forced out, and that they were potentially going to be in charge of the Uncharted series as well. And then the Naughty Dog co-presidents, Evan Wells and Christoph Balestra, came out and said a statement saying, no, that's not what happened at all. She is just leaving. That's not what's happening at all. And yes, Uncharted's okay.
I don't think that's what their statement was. I think what makes this story interesting and combines to make the Voltron of Story of the Week is that the official Naughty Dog response, as I remember it, wasn't that it was like some mutual thing. It's just that, hey, Bruce Stanley and Neil Druckmann didn't force her out. We're the guys ahead of in charge of the studio. Those guys didn't do anything. It made it sound like, hey.
Oh, you read it more as a power, discussion of who has the power here.
No, I read it as we're going to protect our employees. Like, this article is maybe damaging two of our employees' reputation, and then them saying the buck stops with us. But they didn't say, it didn't read to me as this was mutual and we wish her the best. Like, there was none of that. Like, the implication I got from it is she was forced out by Evan and Christoph. Like, that's how it read to me. And it was just such a weird...
And nobody forces out employees at our company except us.
Right.
I kind of got the same impression. It's a little bit, it's a downer one, no matter what way you look at it. She was a creative force at that company. She's primarily responsible for the story arc of what happened in the Uncharted series. And while I don't think anyone's that worried about Naughty Dog, who's a very focused on story kind of company anyway, they're not really worried about them losing that edge. The Last of Us, which she did not have much to do with, is a great example of incredible storytelling in the previous year. And if that's any indication of things moving forward, they're probably in good hands, and they've got people that can step up and be good directors and good writers. So it's not so much I'm worried about the future of the company or the future of their franchises, but this is a blow to the notion that there aren't enough women working in video games in positions of creativity, positions of power, positions of direction. And she was definitely one of those people. So when one of these gets sort of chipped away, and this isn't me implying that I had anything to do with gender, her leaving, probably not, but it was nice to have
everything to do with it.
Had it all. But she was really creative. And I think there'll be a loss there, but chances are, like always with games as big as these and with names as big as hers, she'll get scooped right up and somebody will, hire her in a heartbeat. She's probably in negotiations now. We'll probably end up showing up on some amazing project in the future, and that'll be great. But it's probably Naughty Dog's loss either way.
Microsoft stayed E3. She walks out. This is a PR misstep. In the internet age, welcome to the internet age. it just seemed so bizarre. Once this news got out, no one from Sony or Naughty Dog was really ever in front of it. And then the statement they did release, I still think was a, what? That's the part that blows my mind about this.
Well, this was submitted by at D. Kuhn, by the way, who also agreed this was the story of the week. Am I hearing you correctly in that this is your story of the week, Christian?
This is part of it. The Avengers are assembling. The last part of it, and it's kind of started last week, but was with Sony Santa Monica laying off a bunch of people. So now we have Jack Trenton stepping down, Amy Hennig leaving Naughty Dog, Sony Santa Monica shutting down a project and laying off a bunch of people. And I know that Sony is in a big restructuring, or I don't know, I'm not involved in it, but that's what the news says. But it's like, as a large company, but it just seems like, what the heck is going on? And then at Microsoft, you know, they have a new person in charge of their games division. And it's just like, this is a part of the time where it's like, we have new consoles out and they're both doing pretty well. And Titanfall's out and all this great stuff is coming and all this stuff's happening. And then behind the scenes, it seems like the foundation is just crumbling.
I have a notion about this, and I don't know if I'm right about it, but I've had this feeling for a while, and it is this. And it, to me, it seems obvious, but again, somebody could completely correct me on this or give me an alternate point of view. But it feels like the industry is going through a very serious change, and one that is not in the hands of the typical power brokers, EA, Microsoft, Sony, or anyone else. It is in the hands of a changing market. And the changing market are people who are playing so much on mobile and so much on more than they ever have on PCs, with real ecosystems to help drive PCs, that the console market is looking a little stale to some people. Some people are looking at it and going, well, I've done this four times in a row, or when I was 10, I cared more, or I've got a PC now, I don't have to worry about it. And it's this old tale of, oh, you know, gamers grow up and they go to more sophisticated systems. But I think it's more than that. I think the way people game, the way they get their games, the prices they're willing to pay, free-to-play models, all of this stuff is combining to change the very foundation of what a typical console life cycle looks like and is, and the hype machine around it changes accordingly. So when, you know, Sony and Microsoft come out with new consoles, what was happening in the meantime is this rapid release schedule that both PCs and mobile has seen. So any minute of the day, I can hop on my iPad or my iPhone or my Android phone, and I can find a million new things to take up my time. And they're going to be new. They just showed up today. It's awesome. People are talking about it. My friends on Twitter are playing it. I'm going to get in there. I'm going to play threes until I'm, you know, blue in the face or whatever. It's a simple, casual game, but it's taking the time I might otherwise spend on some console title that has to boot up and sort of, you know, wait a while to get into and then dedicate a bunch of time to. That and PC release cycles are crazy. I wish you could see my Steam library. It looks like a bomb went off in there. There's so many games and so many cool things and so much indie stuff just coming all the time. And the consoles have not kept up with that not even in the least since their launch. It's just weeks between releases. And I feel like there's a market now that's so hungry for smaller experiences that they can get now, get cheaper, play through faster, and get to the next thing, that the typical model is teetering a little bit. And I think that Sony is right to be restructuring. Microsoft should do the same thing. I feel like they have to do something, because this is not good for their traditional model. It's great for others. It's good for Valve. It's good for Apple and Google and everybody else under the sun. But for the guys that have always said, all right, for the next 8 years, we're putting our feet down and here's our console, let's go. So their world is changing.
The looming predicted from when Apple introduced the iOS store, opened it up after the, you know, a little bit after the launch of the first iPhone, you think that looming mobile is going to not topple, but really shake up the console business? You think that tidal wave is hitting?
I do. And I even see traditional PC developers like Blizzard, let's say, with their big top titles where they polish them all heck and back. They take years to get them done. They don't mind delaying them. I think even they are being forced to be quicker about releases. That doesn't mean they're being quicker about quality. They seem to still be able to stick that, but they're also working on much smaller, shorter burst sort of experiences, free to play with Hearthstone. Heroes of the Storm looks to be probably free to play. We haven't even gotten the alpha yet, but it looks likely. And they're aiming for an audience that's, you know, a different audience than the one that was willing to wait 5 years for their next MMO or 6 years for their next Diablo game or whatever. So they're kind of playing both sides of it. That's good for them, because I think that's a smart strategy. But other companies are slower, like they always are. Whenever there's a sea change, these guys are just a little creaky and it's hard for them to switch.
I don't know. I think that there's a lot of truth in what you're saying, but I also, we're certainly still seeing these giant AAA titles be very successful and the market being driven by huge experiences. And I'm certainly, as a gamer, excited about big, deep, long experiences and want more of them. I want the Uncharted's of the world. I want the Titanfalls of the world. I want these high-profile, big development team AAA experiences. And I'm a little bit concerned about making this flood of small experiences dilute the entire experience, the entire hobby, to the point where everything's disposable, everything's you know, you churn through, you play for a couple hours, and you're on to the next thing. And we sort of demand as a buying public that these developers either get on board or and fire a bunch of people and just give me this quick disposable thing that I can play for a few weeks and move on.
I completely agree with you, by the way. That is entirely my stand on the whole thing, which is I don't think this is necessarily good. I think it's going to be painful for a while, and we're not going to know what the results are going to be. And you're right, there will always be a market for the big Uncharted's and for the big games and the big expensive games and the immersive experiences, and I hope they never go away. So this particular period concerns me as well, because what it means, potentially, is less of that stuff and more of companies trying to figure out, well, what's the deal with free-to-play and, you know, taking classics like Dungeon Keeper and ruining it or whatever. All of these things, I don't like this direction. It's not my favorite thing in the world, but I kind of get where it's going and I kind of get why. And it may well be generational, and I don't mean consoles, I mean people.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this continues, especially with these new consoles, because even there's such a push now for even small experiences on these consoles to sort of keep them going, to sustain between the big releases. We've seen the Wii U have to survive on that as well, not just, you know, Sony and Microsoft. Right. I'm surprised, though, Christian, that that was your story of the week. I thought there were two stories that I was certain you were going to pick, one of which broke right after we recorded DLC last week, and
that was so exciting.
The Batman Arkham Knight announcement with the new trailer.
Oh yeah!
I know you're a Batman nut job. You love it. I think this is a pretty. This was submitted by tons of people, by the way, at Tweedledee, at Goldbug74, at Edgevolt, among many others, and certainly awesome trailer. Awesome trailer. Really cool voiceover with the will being read by Bruce Wayne's dad, and we get to see Batman kick some butt and jump out of the Batmobile and do all kinds of cool stuff. I think it's really interesting that here we had a Batman game just come out and not do very well, and yet this new Batman game, because it's got the Batmobile, we're all excited about. So it's a strange. It's like, well, why did people run out and buy the last Batman game?
It's got Rocksteady and it's not cross-gen. That's what's got people excited.
Yeah, right. Those two things are big.
I think the Batmobile, I'm a little worried about the Batmobile, to be honest. Wider streets means that I think mobility might be a little different. They've said you're going to spend a lot of time in the Batmobile.
It's Grand Theft Auto Batman.
Which I don't think I'll like that. I'm optimistic. I'm excited about this game. That trailer was awesome. Do you know what also was an awesome trailer, though? The Arkham Origins trailers. Like, the people, I don't know, this is my ignorance. I don't know if it's been the same, you know, animators and design studio putting together these trailers, but those CG trailers where it was Batman just getting into awesome fights with everybody, and I think it was Black Mask was narrating the Origins trailer about, you know, in Midnight Strikes, go and kill the Bat or whatever.
Pretty sure those are both Blur Studios, I think, and yes, they do amazing freaking work. It's incredible stuff.
Yeah, so this trailer is exciting, but I think what really got people excited was Rocksteady. And the Batmobile is like a fun thing, but that's not what's getting me excited about the game. It's going to be next or current gen only, and the guys that developed the franchise are back.
I'm excited too. I love those Batman games. I don't know how much different this can feel. I mean, is the Batmobile going to be enough? They're saying the game's going to be a lot bigger, and I'm guessing we're going to have a lot more. It's going to feel, I think, a lot like an open world GTA type game. which I guess is different,
though, right? If they're going to really let you drive, the old city, Arkham City cities was cramped. I mean, you put a car in there and suddenly that game's useless. So I feel like the size thing has more to do with the fact that he's going to have a Batmobile and be that mobile. I think that's the key there.
But why drive when you can fly? You know, like I want to go from point A to point B. I don't want to navigate my street. I want to fly over the buildings, right? I could already do that. How cool. I understand the Batmobile is cool. And the idea, which seems to be what they're communicating with this trailer, of hopping in and hopping out of it, using it as an accessory that you can jump into and jump out of to aid in your combat, is a cool idea. But as far as like, oh, you get to drive around the city, it's like, yeah, but I could fly over the city. That's better.
I think if it ends up being like a cool speed burst type of way, like you jump in it, you're not in it for long, you get in it, you zoom around, you blow some crap up, then you launch out of it, and then you're flying really fast across the city, and then you call it again, and you land back in it, and then you know, burn out paradise, launch over something, and smash through a billboard and or some glass, and you jump out, and you beat up some thugs, and soar really far, and then land back in it. I think that type of stuff could be fun and exciting, but I just don't know how they're going to implement it. Because, I mean, if it's a tumbler from Batman Begins and you're driving on the roofs and just smashing everything, I think that could be really fun. But if it's a tumbler that drives like a tank and you're just kind of going through a street real slow, like that's not fun.
Well, it clearly looks like the fan service they're paying there, that car looks like Tim Burton and Batman Begins had a baby, and there's the result of it. And I'm okay with the design and all that stuff, but I think you're right. I mean, you're going to be Spicer-Man. You're going to be in that thing. And if you're not driving on up to the location of the whatever you got to do in your mission, and if you aren't launching out of that thing and kicking a dude on your way down, fighting five guys, and then calling the car, triple somersault in back into the thing, and then on to the next objective, then they're doing it wrong. If this is just purely a taxi, that's a mistake. And I really hope they don't go down that road, because bigger isn't better if you're not giving me something more to do. And I really want to be able, I want that thing to be the accessory you guys are describing.
I'm just curious what their excuse will be this time for why there are no citizens on the street. Oh, it's Christmas and everyone's shopping. Oh, Arkham's let out and everyone's inside and under quarantine. Like, what is the reason?
It's Christmas and everyone's shopping. Batman is the only person that has a car. It's so crazy.
Yeah, exactly. The PS4 and Xbox One aren't quite powerful enough for us to populate these. Just play the game. Just who cares? Just shut up and play the game. You're beating guys up. Look, you're beating guys up. Look, here's a Batmobile. What? People on the streets. You're crazy. You obviously never been to Gotham.
Well, it is one of the great promises of these new consoles, is that they're supposed to be giving us capabilities, and the PC's done this for a bit, but give us games with more dynamic crowd stuff, more sort of ambient AI. Let me have a crowded Gotham street. And let's see what those crowds do when all heck breaks loose. And, you know, all that stuff is very interesting to me. So if they can combine some of those elements with what has previously been a fairly claustrophobic game experience in those first two games, I didn't play Origin, so I couldn't speak to it. But to open that up a little bit doesn't seem too bad. They already know close quarters, get them in a hallway, let's do some combat. Let's see how they do with, you know, broadening it, making it larger. Let's have a little GTA without so much GTA, if that's somehow makes sense.
Yeah, it's interesting to me. I feel like Rocksteady is one of these developers that is a victim of their own success, you know, where it's like, hey, Rocksteady, make another Batman game. Oh, it better have Arkham in the title as well. Okay, keep working on that. You know, let us know when you're done. You know, I feel like I would be excited to see them branch out and do something a little different. You know, I was hoping Rocksteady would make a Superman game. I think that'd be really cool to kind of apply that.
What about Rocksteady making a Batman game with Arkham Superman in the name?
Right. Yes.
Okay.
Rocksteady, Christian's finest for channeling the internet.
We've heard ideas about Green Arrow. He's great. Arrow's a great show on CW. Superman, okay, great. Man of Steel had its issues. Really successful. I like these ideas you're pitching, Rocksteady. I really do, but I don't know. Brad's over here, and I think he's got a really great idea. What was that, Brad? Oh, yeah, it was a Batman game with Arkham in the title. So let's just do that. All right, thanks. Okay, thanks, guys. Great meeting. See you later.
I mean, in a nutshell, the problem with DC, right? It's like, hey, DC, you got this awesome stable of characters, these huge universe of characters. Yeah, I know, but we have Batman, and I don't know if you guys know, but Batman's awesome. So
it's
let's,
so
let's
hard for them
back.
To do anything else. It's so true. Nobody's clamoring to do an Aquaman game. And when they did, it was terrible. Like, it's just, it's like the entirety of the DC lineup, none of it lends itself to video games very well. But Batman, and maybe Rocksteady taught us that lesson, because previous to those games, did anyone really care about a Batman game? I didn't.
Yeah,
but I do now. So
it's true.
You know, I'm always waiting for somebody to surprise me and say, "Hey, Martian Manhunter, it's got
there." You go,
gun.
Make it happen. Let me shapeshift.
Yeah,
I think Injustice and Lego, both the Lego Batman. It's funny that they were still called Lego Batman, even Lego Batman 2, where I played as Superman personally most of the game. But Injustice and Lego Batman 2 were some good uses of the full universe. But yeah, it's like Batman, 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 and hey,
yeah.
I admit it. I love Batman.
even they have this massively successful Superman movie, and they're like, "Well, what should we do for a sequel? Oh, let's put Batman in it." I know that's a good idea, right?
You got the license, dude. Why not?
Speaking of movies, @_BrianHamilton and @SLChavira submitted this story as story of the week, which was the other one I thought you might bring up, Christian, which is the Last of Us live action movie announced. And it's actually going to be written, at least the first draft, will be written by Neil Druckmann, the game's creative director. So it's in the hands of the game makers, the people who know it best. And it looks like Sam Raimi's production company is going to be involved, which does not mean he will direct it or have any direct control over it. But it's, you know, big deal. The first thing I should say about this story, of course, is that 99% of this stuff never materializes into anything anyway, so don't get too excited. We already heard about an Uncharted movie that had big name directors attached and leave and attached. And leave. That's just how Hollywood works. So just having the rights to something or the script being worked on does not mean it will ever see anything on the screen. However, I would love to hear what you guys think about a Last of Us movie. Is that something you want, Scott?
Yeah, I'll just say, I mean, the internet and people on it are often accused of hating things for the sake of hating them. And hearing that another video game's getting live action film treatment makes a lot of people groan. And I'm not usually one of those guys. I usually get excited regardless. I don't care even if it turns out bad. I kind of am excited that video games get the mainstream treatment. It just helps grow this thing I love, and I don't have a problem with it. I have a problem with this one, not because of any of those reasons, but because I feel like they did it already. I feel like for the first time in a very long time, a game gave me one of the most interesting, well-acted, well-choreographed story experiences that I've ever had. I don't know what you actually gain. In the other cases, you gain something by going to film. You gain, I don't know, more fidelity, more, I don't know what. You gain something more than Mario
story.
Brothers gave you, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You gain Bob Hoskins if you had a few more of those. But in this case, I don't know what you're gaining. Yeah, you gain real people and actors maybe that we know and stuff, but they nailed it already. And the story if it's about telling me a story and getting me to pay money for that story, they got me for $60 and I loved it and I'd do it again. So I don't know. This one's weird to me.
I hope, and I don't know if they will because the story was so powerful. But I hope that they don't just tell the game story. I mean, I don't know if either one of you read The Last of Us American Dreams. It was the Dark Horse 4-issue, I believe, originally released comic. And it's actually a prequel to Left Behind, the prequel DLC for The Last of Us. And I thought it was great. I mean, it was well written. The art style complemented some of the gore that was happening. It was like, it's like a real kind of Scott Pilgrim-y, cartoony, kiddish looking art style used. And I think that the world, I'm a big fan of expanded universes when done right. I get a little gun shy when before Dead Space comes out, you know, EA is talking about, we already have the movie and here's the comic and here's the novelization and we have 8 games planned and Dead Space tattoos for everybody. Like, that gets me a little gun shy. But, you know, so many games, we talked about this, Jeff, on when Garnet was on about Titanfall, how that could be a really rich universe to explore. That the
and
game
sounds
itself.
Like they're making live action shorts. Did you hear that news this week? Making live action special effects laden shorts based on the Titanfall universe, which sounds really cool.
which, I think is cool. So I think The Last of Us, hopefully with people that know the franchise better than anyone else, could maybe play around with it and give us a different story. I mean, I think you could have an amazing movie that takes place after the game. I mean, would they do that? Because does it spoil the game? Maybe. Or is it a prequel? Or I don't know. I hope that they don't just retell the movie. I have a feeling they will. But I'm excited to see Mark Wahlberg play Joel, because I only see video game movies with Marky Mark.
you're probably right, sadly.
Inevitable. Inevitable.
Who knows? It just seems, I agree with everything you said, and I want something like this to be good, but they'll probably do the same story, and if they're just rehashing it, they did such an amazing job that the game, you know, deserves a little more, you know, not respect, but it's just something special in video game storytelling. It's a landmark, and they're going to be known for this forever. To turn that, just go straight to the movie and still pretend that games aren't the equal of films yet. They're different, but you know,
well,
in a lot of ways, it's the equal of a movie.
Let me argue, play devil's advocate on that and say that you get books turned into movies and you get comic books turned into movies, and it's literally just telling the same story in a different medium there. And it supposedly doesn't diminish the book or the comic book.
That's a really good point. That's a good point. Except that you're bringing things to life that on the page are not there other than in your imagination. In the game's case, they have literally actors and they have mocap and they have sets and they have places and locations and they have sound work that's bar none, some of the best I heard last year, and all these kinds of factors that your book can't do. I agree. It's a slippery slope and a fine line. And I'm pulling hairs just a little bit on it. But I just feel like if you were going to pick a game to make a movie about, this actually to executives might make the most sense, because it is the most fleshed out thing they can lay their eyes on and go, yeah, we can get the feel and tone of exactly the kind of movie this will be. Let's green light it and go. I'm just not sure. Well, you know, it's always that fear they're going to diminish the original property. And I guess maybe that's all I'm worried about.
But if they do make it, you can tell which one of your friends were cool, because they'll have the cool friends will have the original cover, and then your late to the party friends will have the game with the cover of the movie poster on it. And you can be like, we get it, bro. You didn't like Tolkien until they made the movies. What do you mean? I read it. Oh, dang it. So,
no, my copy of The Hobbit just was, I read it so many times it got worn out and I had to buy a new one, man.
My new copy of the Bible has the cover of the Noah movie on it.
Nice. I love those adaptations. They're the best.
All right. Well, I'm going to get to my story of the week, my actual story of the week, in a second. But first, we have to thank our sponsor, New Relic. We love New Relic. They've been with us from the very beginning. New Relic is a software analytics company that helps make sense of billions of metrics across millions of applications, all in real time. It's 2014, and this year, people are focused on seamless application performance across multiple platforms on all their devices, which sounds simple, but making an app work consistently well on lots of different devices, all with different operating systems running different types of software, that, my friends, is complex. How complex? Well, back in the old days, like 2007, it was basically impossible for app developers to know how their apps were performing once it got shipped to production. Do you remember those days? You'd spend all of your time doing internal bug hunts and then eventually just cross your fingers and hope for the best. Sit around and monitor Twitter and the app stores, eager to see how your app is doing or how bad it was doing. Thankfully, those days are now officially behind us because of New Relic. New Relic lets you track your application performance down to the end user level, all in real time. That means you can spot problems, find bugs, and fix your code fast, way before your users even notice anything is wrong. So go and check out New Relic. Go to newrelic.com/DLC, and you can learn more, and then use the offer code DLC30, which will give you a special 30-day extended free pro trial. That is available exclusively to listeners of DLC. We really appreciate them. They make this show possible, so please support them. Check that out. Go to newrelic.com/DLC and use promo code DLC30. All right, guys. I have to admit, the stories that you have brought up are definitely the most important stories of the week. But I have a couple of things that seem to be happening that are really personal to me as far as things that resonate for me. And that are, you know, there's this thing I've been talking about a lot. We have, I think the whole gaming hobby has been talking about a lot, which is this idea of treating each other with respect online. And, you know, in light of the Flappy Bird guy quitting and Phil Fish, you know, stomping off, I think there's this feeling in the air of the internet being a crappy place for a lot of people, especially women, but a lot of people. And two people that I respect immensely, Patrick Klepek, who was on this show a few episodes ago, and Russ Pitts, who writes for Polygon and lots of other places, both did really interesting things this week in response to some horrible stuff that was written online. Patrick wrote an interesting post on his Tumblr about interacting with a guy who is upfront about being a person that writes terrible things and is kind of happy with the fact that that's what he does. He goes and writes awful things to people and tells them to go kill themselves, et cetera, et cetera. And Patrick spent time engaging him and kind of interviewing him and asking him to explain his position. And it's a really fascinating article. I urge you to check it out. It's actually kind of chilling to read. I found it to be a little bit too close to reading an interview with a sociopath, because the guy really has he gets to a place late in the article that's pretty interesting, and I won't spoil it for people, but it's a really interesting perspective on that. And Russ, what he did, he was attacked with this guy who wrote a blog that's really just awful, talking about a whole bunch of different people, and he took on this idea of don't engage, which is something that I hear a lot when I tweet about something awful someone said or whatever. People just saying, hey, ignore it, don't engage, you're just feeding the trolls, right? That's the big the big question. You know, do you feed the trolls by even bringing it up? And his position is, we can't continue to not engage. So I'm curious what you guys feel about this issue. Scott, I'm sure you've dealt with similar stuff online. Anybody that puts stuff out into the public seems to. So what's your feeling on this?
For sure. I mean, everyone, if you're creating content, you're putting it online, you're going to get trolls. And we built a pretty good community. The Frog Pants AIE Guild community is a strong one. Everyone really looks out for each other. There's a real family thing going on. This event we have every year called Nerdtacular brings them all sort of together. And there's a real reinforcement every July or every summer when we do that, and it kind of lasts all year. And so I'm proud of how little we do get, but it still happens. And when it does, I'm always of about three different minds on it. One, there's a piece of me that wants to lash out and be all ticked. There's a piece of me that wants to ignore it, like ignore the trolls and move on. There's a piece of me who wants to engage and find out what's really going on. And the one that usually wins out is the one that wants to find out what's really going on. And by that, I mean, if it's on Twitter, let's say, I just want to say, all right, well, this is a lousy forum for this. Let's take this to email or something. I'd really like to talk to you and see where your head's at. Like, I'm genuinely interested in what you want to tell me. And the net effect of that is either that freaks them out and they never contact me and I never hear from them again, or they'll take me up on the deal. And it's about 65% of the time people will take me up on the deal, which is to have a real conversation. Some of those have turned into Skype phone calls and, you know, real-time chats over Facebook or something else so that we can actually have some sort of meaningful discussion outside of being in the same room. And every time, and I don't mean just sometimes, every time we do that, we walk away from that conversation either agreeing, compromising, at the very least understanding where someone else is coming from. Someone always apologizes for one thing they said or one reaction they had. And it never is just a big drawn out fight till there's, you know, there will be blood kind of moment where there's, you know, someone's got a milkshake in a freaking bowling alley. It never gets that far. It's a weird reference. I hope people get that. But anyway, the point is there's real strength in that engagement. I'm a huge, huge believer in it. It's hard. It takes time. It's frustrating. Sometimes you don't get the results you want. But like I said, the track record for me has been amazing. Once you get them to agree to that, to actually have a conversation that may have started with them saying the most vile, hideous thing you've ever read in your Twitter feed, ends up with two adults having a conversation, understanding different points of view, and walking away better for it. And it can happen, I think, every time. So this idea that ignoring is the way to deal with it, I don't think helps anybody. It's like saying, well, just ignore Hitler. He's fine. Just ignore Hitler.
I agree.
I know it's a bit of a stretch, but you know what I mean.
No, well, you know, what's the theorem that says all internet discourse eventually gets to Hitler? But the chat room is talking about this as well. And I see Trojan in the chat says, I think engaging trolls is a losing battle. It's what they want. And Mind Riot says, this is a problem that cannot be fixed. I disagree with that 100%, and I agree with you, Scott. I refuse to believe that this is a problem that can't be fixed, and I refuse to believe that we just have to put up with horrible behavior. I refuse to live in that world. I understand that human nature says that if people can get away with things, maybe they can, but I truly believe that if enough people stand up and just make it unacceptable and make that kind of behavior not tolerated, that there will be change. And I think that, you know, there's been countless examples in history of people who said, well, it's pointless to resist this. And then someone resists it and then it changes. So why should the internet be any different? I understand we're dealing with, you know, whatever we're dealing with, but I refuse to just ignore something. I'm not going to just allow this to continue and pretend it doesn't. What do you think, Christian?
I think there is a real problem here. I also think that people are often quick to call someone a troll when they say something that disagrees with what they say. I do think that people cross the line and are jerks and attacky and snarky, and sometimes tone can be lost over the internet. And I do think sometimes people sit at home and try to get attention by calling out other people. But I do think that the people that put content out, unfortunately, you know, you have to have a little bit of a thicker skin. And with the internet, you know, more people are able to be content producers and providers. But like, you know, would you call when Jay Leno was hosting The Tonight Show, was he a troll during his opening monologue when he took pop shots at politicians and celebrities? And while Jay Leno is a very tame example, right? But
it's a completely different context. It's a completely different context.
I don't know if it is. At some level, there's a spectrum of in the public eye. And, you know, I am not a practicing attorney. My bars are currently sent to inactive. This is not legal advice in any way, shape, or form, right? But in the legal world, in terms of libel and slander, you have to deal with the issue of whether someone is a public figure or not. And sometimes when you put yourself out there, unfortunately, part of that is people are going to try to, you know, either get success off of your coattails, and they do that by trying to take you down a peg, or they want to just interact and find a way to make themselves feel good by belittling someone that they view as a higher status. And I don't think it's right. But at some spectrum, at some level, you know, if I were to sit here and to trash Justin Bieber for a while, I think we could all have a really good laugh at it. But am I trolling Bieber? Yes, I am. Now, a lot of times in geek culture, I think people cross the line much quicker. And I don't know if that's always the case. It might just be because that's the culture that, you know, I'm part of, so I'm the most familiar with. But I do feel like in geek and nerd culture, oftentimes it goes to dark places of misogyny and death and racism and really scary things that I think our society as a whole needs to work on. But bigger picture that our society as a whole needs to work on. And I think fixing the problem externally outside of the internet will then hopefully fix it within the internet as well. I mean,
I agree.
Using the N-word 20, 30, 40 years ago, less and less people use it now today. And that's, I support that. The new F-word, this isn't a politics podcast, so I won't get into it. But I think that's where the change happens. And then unfortunately, the internet is still Red Dead Redemption. You know what I mean? The internet is still the Wild West where people are free to say things they otherwise wouldn't say in person.
Louder than it is, don't you agree? Like, it seems like you're not, I mean, I think this is important to know. There is it feels sometimes like the majority of people are idiots on Xbox Live screaming horrible racist things at you. But the truth is, it's a very small, albeit loud and vocal minority, and it's distorting. It distorts how big the problem either is or seems.
Yeah. I think that's a very, very good point.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this is important, but I also think I would vote for moving on, but I'm not trying to belittle the importance of this. I just don't know.
I just wanted to bring it up and highlight. I think Patrick and Russ both did really awesome things by putting that out there. And I think the more people raise it, it's the kind of thing where we just have to keep dinging it. And you know, people will start realizing, hey, you know, it's better to be good to each other. Yeah. Anyway, but yes, I
guarantee
I agree.
You this too. If I could find that 13-year-old kid who's chewing me out on Xbox Live in a game of Call of Duty, if I could get him for 10 minutes at a Dairy Queen and just sit down and buy him a milkshake and have a conversation, I guarantee you that's a different kid. He's not that thing he's portraying. He may be portraying that thing, but deep down there's other stuff. He probably cried and up just as much as I did. Who knows?
No, he's the kid that you beat the crap out of in Dairy Queen is what he is.
I know. You see the head, that'll be your big news for next week. But yeah.
We have to, we got lots of stuff to talk about, but I want to hit this one because a couple people suggested it, and it's a board gaming story that relates to video games as well. At Cassex and at DJ Harvey both submitted a Cryptozoic's announcement of their publishing of the Portal board game. Cryptozoic is a board gaming company that really makes their money doing a lot of licensed games. You can look at their list of games, and it includes games from, you know, Castle, Lord of the Rings, Lock and Key, all kinds of stuff. They have some really awesome original games too. Raffle, which is a really fun party game made by the illustrator of Munchkin. Walking Dead game, for example. I think this is really cool because it originated within the Portal video game team. This was a prototype that the original designers of Portal were working on, and they got it to a point where they were so happy with it that they brought it to a publisher, and it looks like it's going to happen. It sounds like a really cool game. You know, the idea of going through portals, it seems like it would work on the board, and I'm excited that these licensed properties help get people into board games in a better way. Does this sound like something that you guys would be into?
So it reminds me of that Rampage game that's not out yet, but is coming soon.
It's out.
Board game. Is it out now? I thought it wasn't out.
Oh yeah, it's out. It's pretty cool too. You literally can blow down buildings and do all kinds of crazy stuff. Yeah, it's not directly based on Rampage, but
right.
Basically
it didn't.
I
looked at all the art and I went, no, this isn't a Rampage license at all. In fact, I wondered how they were getting away with it. But but regardless, that it seems like this foray into more physical experiences with board games and less sort of these represent numbers and these cards and chips mean this and these tokens mean that. It's interesting to see more games crop up where there is there's literally a building to knock down, or in this case, there are portals to get through, and it's not just simply move your pieces and roll the dice. And I think that's a great move. I like that kind of stuff a lot.
Yeah, it looks really fun, and I'm glad it does kind of pointing video gamers into that direction as well. All right, so that does it for Story of the Week, but I want to know what you guys are playing. Scott, I've been out of town, away from my computer, away from Diablo 3. Tell me how much I'm going to love it.
All right, so you're already... I already know this of you. You love Diablo. You've enjoyed it in the past. You've enjoyed it. You've enjoyed Diablo 3 for what it offered at the time. I'm in the same boat. I feel like that game was more a part of my DNA than almost any other game I played in the 90s and moving forward. And so, you know, Diablo 3 was a big deal for me, and I really enjoyed Diablo 3. But I agreed with most people. Some people got a little ragey about it, but I agreed with a lot of people that the real money auction house and the gold auction house put them at odds with their goals to make Diablo a true Diablo game. Having those auction houses changed the way you played it. You would play through the game until you needed better gear, and you would go buy the gear instead of earning the gear. That seemed always to be kind of cross purposes to me. I still enjoyed the game. I still played it through 3 times, but after my 3rd time, when I should be working on a 4th time, I kind of said, I'm putting that to the side for a while. This loot 2.0 stuff in this latest patch, which is sort of a lead up patch, get ready for Reaper of Souls, which comes out on the 25th, completely changed all of that. Gone are the auction houses. They are out. A whole new loot system is in, and it now has back that intangible thing that Diablo 2 gave you, and 1 to some degree, that you couldn't quite put your finger on, that seemed like magic, which was the let me just kill one more thing. Let me just go to that one more corner that I haven't exposed yet. Let me go one more act. Let me go one more minute until I get that, and then go one more and then one more. That is back, and it's back with a vengeance. I'm walking around now at level 60 plus a couple of Paragon levels with nothing but almost all legendary gear. I got a couple of yellows, and that's it. Now, that may seem a little bit crazy because I earned all that within about 5 or 6 levels, but it felt so good to have real fights with real challenge, end up persevering, and then having a legendary drop. And it was like, yeah. I'm doing that again. It got back its groove, and it knows what it wants to be again. And they've admitted as such. They've been really open about this. Back when you and I were at BlizzCon, they were talking about this quite a bit. And it's a huge, huge change and a great big difference. And I am way back in, way more than I should be. And it's only one of the features. There are way more stuff happening there. The new map system's amazing. The way you can team with your friends and do clans and groups and essentially build a guild in the game now is really awesome. And when that adventure mode comes out with Reaper, we're all screwed. It's going to be just nonstop Diablo. So they're back, and they're back with fire in their eyes for sure. It's really good.
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I think the key to Diablo was always, it was never the same as WoW seems to be, which is I want the best in class item in that slot. Because in Diablo, you were never able to get it. You couldn't get it. If there was ever the drop of all drops and you got one item that was like, oh man, that's the item. It's perfect for me. But it was always cobbling together what you managed to get. And when you, with the auction house, when you logged on and you just searched for the perfect item for yourself and you saw at the top of that list, oh, okay, 5 people are selling that and it's X number of gold or X number of real human dollars, it was pointless to get anything other than the best in class item. Like, why would I want anything less than that? Because it's available right there to me. Now all I have to do is either grind or open my wallet.
Yeah.
So the imperfection of your loot, I think, is the magic of Diablo, is making it work with what you've got and finding what you have and the unique thing that you've got that nobody else that you're playing with has, because it just happened to drop for you, you know, rather than, oh, everybody, let's all buy this thing because it's the best one for us, you know?
Yeah. And having a more meaningful difficulty system means a lot as well. So gone is the whole, well, you beat it on this hard level, now beat it on the next hard level, and that's how you advance through difficulties. That's gone, and you straight up pick it for whatever character you are. And if you're starting a brand new noob and you want to be on masterful, you can. And it'll kick your trash, but you're going to get way better drops, way more gold, way better XP. Like, there are these great risk and reward systems that are now built into the very fundamental core of the game that just take it back to what it once was. And as much as I loved it in its current incarnation, and part of the things I loved was the rune system was amazing, and I still love the skill system, and I think it's one of the most innovative in the business. Nobody makes a cooler action RPG skill system than what is currently Diablo 3. This patch has said, well, how about all this other stuff? Now I feel like it's like Christmas. And it's a game I played the hell out of already and was probably done with until the expansion. But man, I can't stop. It's just back. It's that crack, and they really know what they're doing with that. So yeah, good luck if you're getting back in.
I'm back in town. Now I have time to play games, and I've got Titanfall tomorrow, Diablo 3. I've got the new episode of The Walking Dead. Still want to play Stick of Truth, which I didn't have a chance to play this week. It's like abundance of riches. Christian, what have you been playing this week?
Yeah, man, we are back, right? News breaking this week, Titanfall this week. I just started scratching episode 2 of The Walking Dead. Just got into that, and so far, so fantastic. And then I went back to Killzone Shadowfall, and I'm playing Injustice on my Vita. Killzone, the single player of Killzone, definitely has its flaws. But that game is beautiful. The lighting in that game is really impressive. So I went back to playing that as I was getting hyped for Infamous and watching some videos. And I was like, I want to see a pretty game. So I played some Forza, and then I went back to Killzone. It's so pretty. And I don't know. I enjoy it. I really enjoy it. It's Titanfall is so close, though, right? Like, that's why I went back, and it's like, I need to put some time into Killzone, because after this week, I don't know when I'm going to be able to look back. You know, it's Titanfall, then Infamous I have pre-ordered, Ground Zeroes I have pre-ordered, and then we're screaming ahead, and then before I know it, it's E3, and we're in the thick of it. It's exciting.
Then Christmas, and then it's 2017, and then I have a long white beard, and oh man.
Have you touched Lego Marvel at all?
No, I literally got home last night, so I have been away from my systems, but I'm excited to play that too. You let me borrow your copy. There's so much.
I hear that's awesome. Best Lego game they've done.
Yeah.
It's great. Oh, and I went back to Thief. I know I talked about it last week and said I liked it. I played about another, I don't know, maybe hour or so of Thief. I'm still enjoying it. It's a slower paced game than like a Killzone, obviously. But so going back to that, it's still nothing changes from what I said last week.
I also moved into a new apartment this week, so I'm setting up all my systems. Ah, lots to do. All right, well, we also have lots to do on this show because we still have March Madness. And we got lots of matchups, man, powerful matchups. We got the Spicer Division coming up. But before we get there, I just want to mention a couple of things. First of all, I want to congratulate our buddy Garnett Lee on the first episode of his new show, Garnett on Games. You should check that out by going to his Facebook page. Really cool. He's doing a solo show. Finally, he's got his own damn show, which is what he's always wanted. And I think he and I are going to also do something else together at some point. But you should check that out. It's really great. He's a passionate dude and very knowledgeable and one of my good buddies.
And it's also, just him sitting on various games. And you have to guess what games he's sitting on. It's Garnett on Games. And
exactly.
I think he's on a copy of Yoshi's Island 1.
Yes, that's right.
Oh man.
I also want to mention that the LA Marathon was yesterday, and I've gotten several tweets. People that are getting into physical fitness and running, one of the things that I've been trying to promote for several years now is this idea of geeks in sneaks. Just because you like video games, you like movies, you like sedentary entertainment where you're not getting up and doing it. Stuff doesn't mean you can't also be active. So I would encourage people. It's a really fun, awesome way, easy, cheap way to stay in shape is to just throw on some sneaks and go out for a run. You don't have to do a marathon right away. Just get out there for a few minutes. Geeks and sneaks. It's great. If you do something, why not throw that hashtag on it and let me know. I'll help promote you. All right. That said, now it's time to get to the madness. Hopefully you guys are checking out, anybody that's listening live right now, we're going to get your phone calls to help us decide the March Madness matchups. You can call 512-518-5714. Again, 512-518-5714. And you can check out the current bracket. We're doing the right-hand side of the original bracket, which is on display at jeffcanada.com. This is the Spicer Division. It is pretty intense. I'm trying to find my link here that I put up for myself with all the stats. Oh, there it is. Okay. So, first up, we have number one seed in this division, The Last of Us, going up against number 16 seed, Counter-Strike. Scott, what do you think? Last of Us or Counter-Strike? Who wins?
Oh. Jeez. Probably Counter-Strike.
Yeah? Were you a Counter-Strike guy back in the day?
I like Counter-Strike Go a lot. The new one, Global Ops or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
Go is all you ever see. So I always just call it Counter-Strike Go. That game is really, really good. And they're putting all kinds of crazy crap in it. It's getting a Linux port shortly. Brand new maps are just put in. Some harking back to a lot of fan favorites and stuff. But moreover, I feel like that game is trying to position itself as a kind of a hot new esport. And the agility factor alone, I mean, if you're just going to put those games up to each other, I got all the ammo and guns in the world. And Counter-Strike Go, and there's no way anybody in Last of Us is handling that. They're all going down, even those mushroom heads.
Throwing the gauntlet right at your feet, Spicer, going after your game. Yeah. Tell me why you think Last of Us beats Counter-Strike.
Yeah, I need to vote for The Last of Us. The Last of Us is one of, if not the best experience I've had with a video game, from the bond I created with the game and the emotional response I had to playing a video game. I liked the action. I liked the set pieces. I really thought the game hit on all cylinders. That's where my vote goes. I think The Last of Us is one of the best games ever made.
Time you said that, though, I have killed you 18 times with my pistol.
He's
got a piece of scissors.
That's not what this is about. That's not about how many times someone can kill someone, because while you're sitting in your camp with your family and your friends and you're loading your ammo and you're specking out for the round, Ellie and I snuck into your camp and snapped your neck and everyone else's neck in the camp because I'm a mass freaking murderer with a daughter in one blade.
Wow. All right. That's a fair point.
If Counter-Strike wins, though, if Counter-Strike wins this whole thing, that could be an upset that I could see happening. Like, will I be upset Cinderella. If Counter-Strike beats The Last of Us? Yes. Is Counter-Strike an amazing and important game? Yes. So, but The Last of Us for me.
Think of the hundreds of thousands of hours that people have put into playing Counter-Strike. I think that dwarfs. And Counter-Strike...
It murders it. It's not even a comparison. Just look at the years. I mean, I started playing that thing in, 98, 99? Whatever it was for the first mod.
It's not all about murder and death, buddy. Come on.
Well, let's find out what somebody on the phone thinks. I have somebody from 617 on the line. What do you think, Last of Us or Counter-Strike?
Unfortunately, this is the one in this side of the bracket I'm least qualified to answer. But Counter-Strike was my first major multiplayer experience, The original. My first job every day at lunch was Counter-Strike with the whole team. But I think The Last of Us, even though I don't have a PS3, has to win on story grounds and long-term influence.
Wow.
I love everything about call, but just don't admit that you're not qualified to say anything, and then don't admit you didn't own a PS3, and then you're like every other commentator on the internet or on the news, right? Say your opinion, say it as fact, and we move on.
It's funny that his idea for making Last of Us win is that it's going to have long-term effect when we see the long-term effect of Counter-Strike. It's already happened. I got bad news for you guys, or at least I got bad news for Scott. Hundreds and hundreds of votes came in this week. Last of Us, 70%. Counter-Strike, 28%.
Honestly not all that surprised. I mean, it's not the hot thing right now. But ask us in another 5 years when one game is still being played and the other one is a distant memory.
That's
a little smack I was laying down right there.
I liked Counter-Strike. I never got into it. I'm going to put my vote with Last of Us and let the number one seed progress. And
Jeff
side
votes
with the people.
After it's already been decided, Jeff puts his vote on the winning side to make himself feel good. That's not how it works. I voted for Obama both elections, man. Did you actually vote? No, I didn't.
All right, next up we got the 8 and 9 seed heading off against one another. The 8 seed is Grand Theft Auto Vice City, which was the highest rated of the Grand Theft Autos, although almost every Grand Theft Auto got at least some votes in the initial bidding for what should make the tournament. But Vice City got the most votes for that series, so it's representing all the Grand Theft Autos, against Uncharted 2, another series that got multiple votes for multiple entries, but Uncharted 2, by far, the most popular of the Uncharted games. So GTA Vice City versus Uncharted. I will tell you guys, pretty close on the voting, so what do you think?
I loved Vice City. It was my favorite and remains my favorite of the GTA series, and it's never lived up to that again, I don't think. I just think that was an amazing game. I also think there's probably too much nostalgia for that, and I think people misremember how it's kind of janky to play. I think the Uncharted games are examples of how to make video games in every way, and I think that's the clear winner for me, without question. Uncharted, all the way.
If this
I think
were
I know
about,
what Christian's going to say.
If this were Uncharted Golden... Abyss, Golden Compass. If this were the Vita Uncharted, obviously I'd vote for that. But since this is the proper... Uncharted 2 is phenomenal, and I'm voting for it. Grand Theft Auto Vice City is my favorite Grand Theft Auto of all time, but it's not Uncharted 2.
Wow. I'm going to go to the phones. Area code 304. What do you think? GTA Vice City or is it Uncharted 2?
Well, I don't have a PlayStation 3 yet, so I can't really speak on that.
What did we talk about? What did we do?
Never
just don't
played
say
Uncharted, it. Unfortunately.
Don't wow. say any of that. We're going to start again. We're going to start again. Don't
I, all right.
Well,
I'll come back to you for another one.
I do agree with Vice City. Oh, okay.
I'll come back to you for another one. We're going to go on to the next person.
Real quick. Callers.
Yes.
Don't admit to not having a system. Don't admit to not having a game.
They're honest just people, say, Christian. Don't tell them not to be honest.
Say your opinion. Say Scott is wrong every time he disagrees with Christian. And tell Jeff to man up and vote before everybody else votes. And that's a great call. Like that's all I'm asking for.
And 407.
1,000 five-star iTunes reviews.
I know you've owned a PS3 since launch day. Go ahead.
Yes, I did actually, and I actually was the guy who called last week and spoiled Shadow of the Colossus for everybody, so I apologize for that. but between those two, I think I'd have to go with. I love Vice City, but I think the memory of Uncharted 2 is just seared in my brain. I think I finished the game in one sitting and just never left my couch, so I'd have to go with Uncharted 2. I mean, just the train sequence alone, I think. Set the bar for what even though it was a scripted sequence, you didn't feel, even though you're literally on rails on a train, you didn't feel the director's hand guiding you through that scene.
Yeah, well, that's the big matchup, right? That's the biggest matchup between these two games is the game where you feel the director's hand guiding you through, or where you're the director. You can make a great train sequence in GTA as well, because there's a train. Just go over to the train and make the sequence yourself. That's kind of a big deal that GTA, I mean, this is the only GTA game on the list. GTA changed the world in adding open world games to the mix. I mean, that's how that genre started. Let's look at this. I'll vote before we look at, I look at the statistics, guys. I'm also voting on Uncharted 2. So I know.
Not a big shock. You've gone on the record to be a big Uncharted fan in the past.
So. I am a huge Uncharted fan, and that's two Naughty Dog games in a row that we just beat sort of seminal games in the gaming hobby. Uncharted 2 with 59% of the vote, Grand Theft Auto with 40% of the vote. So that's
good showing. It's a good showing.
Pretty good. But I think we're going to go with Uncharted 2 and move right on to the next matchup, which is Christian's best game of all time.
No, this isn't the Wii version.
GoldenEye 007. I'm guessing for the N64 against Final Fantasy VII. So there's two sevens up against each other. 5-seed GoldenEye against 12-seed Final Fantasy. So GoldenEye, the big favorite coming into the matchup. Scott, hit me on those.
Oh, geez. I'm going to go with GoldenEye also. And I realize some of my opinions on these games are peppered by my memories of them and the good times I had. But man, we actually went out and got cardboard and taped up dividers on my TV. That's how hardcore we were into that multiplayer.
Yeah.
And the single player was great, but never had the living room had that kind of just bonanza going on the TV, and maybe never since. So yeah, I got to give it to GoldenEye for doing a thing in a generation that was not known for that thing. And it endures to this day. I don't think the game holds up all that well, but what we do in shooters versus one another is a heck of a legacy left by that game.
Christian?
So I've never owned a PlayStation 2, and I've never played Final Fantasy VII. I actually don't know what video games are.
Yeah, but if you've ever heard of a random encounter, then you know you can't vote for a Final Fantasy game.
I mean, I read the book of GoldenEye, but it had Pierce Brosnan on the cover, so I don't think it was the right version. Both of these games are fantastic. I don't think that Final Fantasy VII is the best Final Fantasy. Granted, I haven't played many after, probably 8. GoldenEye is a piece of dog crap if you go back and play it, which I did a couple of years ago. It does not hold up well. No. But at the time, it was amazing, and I had more fun with GoldenEye than I had with Final Fantasy VII. Final Fantasy VII was probably one of the best system sellers of all time. Those cutscene graphics coming on a home console were amazing, and I remember in my theater arts class in high school, we'd sit around for the first 20 minutes and just talk about spoilers in the game because... we were all playing it on the same pace. But I have to go to GoldenEye as my personal pick. But Final Fantasy VII is what a game. You guys be crazy.
Final Fantasy VII is awesome. Cloud, giant sword, killing stuff. Amazing storytelling, amazing cutscenes. I could not believe that a video game could do what that game did when it came out. But both of these games really... can only be judged in the context of when they came out, because either of them, if you put them in now, you'd be like, what?
Seven looks real bad right now. And that's fine.
Well, so
you're
does
right.
GoldenEye. So does GoldenEye.
No, you're totally right. You have to look at these in the context in which they were released. If you look at them now, it is not fair. It's also a part of the generational twist where polygonal stuff, we hadn't figured that out yet. Early PS1 titles, blah. Nobody looks fondly on that. Everyone wants to make retro 8-bit games. Nobody's trying to make retro early jittery polygon right. games from the PS1
no
era.
One wants
they just
to make
aren't.
Virtua Fighter looking games.
It was too transitional. That was like a weird stepping stone period that nobody, you know, there's some innovation there, but nobody looks back and goes, man, that aesthetic was sweet.
Final Fantasy VII was PS1. I'm an idiot, not PS2. Yeah, I never owned a PS2, so what are you getting? No, I'm just kidding. PS1.
All right, let's go to the phones. 720. Are these guys right, or am I right? Final Fantasy VII, GoldenEye, which is the one.
You know, even though Final Fantasy VII had like a 100-hour plus main storyline, just out of pure hours, I played couch co-op but couch multiplayer with my buddies. I'm gonna have to go with GoldenEye as well. And if you were odd job in multiplayer, you suck. That's a cheap move.
Yeah, you did, because you were short, right?
Yeah, you were short, and you'd have to aim down to actually shoot the guy. You couldn't just, shoot blindly.
Yep, and the way that gun would work, it would had this like dead zone that it would center to, and you'd run. And if somebody ran in the room was odd job, you didn't even know he's in there. Oh, that I forgot about that. That is the that makes me want to swear on this clean podcast.
Those are good memories. I do have fond memories, but nothing like the fond memories of Final Fantasy VII. I think I just like RPGs more than shooters in general. And you guys, the people are with you, although just by a hair. 52% for GoldenEye, 46% for Final Fantasy.
That's a long hair.
That's pretty close, actually, for the voting in this.
That is close. And they're classics. So, I mean, who are we kidding? No matter who you are, you got to admit that they're classics. I just think, I think
despite my vote, I think GoldenEye will progress in the tournament. Moving on to number 4 seed Mass Effect 2 against number 13 seed Assassin's Creed 2. Two sequels that were better than the original games in their series by a large margin, I would say, on both of those. And two, games that are pretty recent, I think. What do you think, Scott?
All right, I'm going Mass Effect 2 here because it is all the reasons you were just talking about Final Fantasy VII, but in the kind of RPG I most relate to. I don't know if that means I just like Western RPGs better. Probably does. Never was much for the turn-based Japanese stuff growing up or now, but I loved Mass Effect 2 top to bottom. And the injection of more action-based elements was just the right balance with the RPG stuff. It was a huge improvement over 1. I don't know what went wrong in 3. 3 never felt right to me, but 2, seminal game in the series, difficult to live up to, and nothing ever really came close during this generation as far as big, expansive, action-based console RPGs. So for me, the clear winner.
What I think would set... Assassin's Creed 2 gets the advantage because it came out on the PS3 and Xbox 360, while Mass Effect 2 came out on the PlayStation 2. And it just didn't have the Mass Effect.
All right, Christian, you're making a travesty.
I want the kind of crack he's smoking. That's awesome.
Mass Effect 2 wins. Mass Effect 2 is a masterpiece
Xbox
in gaming.
And PC, yeah.
And it wins this division. I mean, this competition. Easily. Easily Mass Effect 2. Easily.
Yeah. I'm going to shock the world and say neither of these games deserve to be in the tournament.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't think either of them is as good. To be in the top 32 games, to be in this tournament, neither of them. Nope. I know, travesty. I know I'm saying heresy, but I think neither of them. If I had to pick one, I'd probably go Mass Effect. But
Brotherhood's better than 2 anyway, if you're talking about Assassin's Creed. So I feel like already I agree with you on even that level. There's a better sequel.
Let's go back to 304. He was on earlier, and I told you we would be back. What do you think, Assassin's Creed 2 or Mass Effect 2?
I would have to say Mass Effect, just because for the reason that Final Fantasy VII was in the running in the last matchup. What that game did for storytelling was just impressive. I'm somebody that really likes Bethesda games, that type of RPG, but I put so many hours into the Mass Effect series, I lost my entire save and still went back and replayed through that entire game, and I have more achievement points in that game than any other game.
Wow. Lost his save. So it's like, this game had a huge error that caused me to lose my save, but I still love it. Well, let's take a look at the statistics. It looks like Mass Effect, 66% against Assassin's Creed's 31%. So Mass Effect, we all agree, assassinating the assassin. All right, next up, we have got a couple of fighters. This is a really interesting matchup to me. Number 5 seed Street Fighter 2 against number 11 seed Pokemon Red Blue. Now, I have to say, I am a person that didn't really ever get into Pokemon, and so I probably shouldn't vote here, but I love Street Fighter 2 so much. It is such a huge part of my childhood. I fantasized about that game. I thought about that game all the time. I was obsessed with Street Fighter 2. I went as an exchange student to Japan right around the time that Street Fighter 2 was huge, and I bought all this merchandise that was there that you couldn't get in the States. It was amazing. I still have it all. I used to walk home from school and fantasize like, oh my God, what if all the world's wars could be eliminated and you could just determine all conflict based on Street Fighter tournaments? You'd have a representative from America versus a representative from Russia. And if there's a conflict, they just, you know, you have to pick Zangief versus Ken. And that would be how they determine. It could be, we could have peace on Earth. I know. I went off the deep end. I was a crazy young idiot,
wide-eyed young Jeffrey Cannata. It's got a way to solve all our problems. That's awesome. Right? I love that.
If only I could have had an audience with the heads of state, I would have been. Anyway, so yeah. I think Street Fighter II is one of the biggest games of my life, and I certainly think it should progress in this tournament. What do you think, Scott?
I'm with you 100% and have some of my fondest memories of anything I ever did at 2 a.m. with anyone I ever knew. Just staying up late and playing that game until our fingers bled on that SNES version. And then the arcade where I just put way too many quarters in it. It was a gigantic seismic influence in games. I don't know how you'd deny it. I mean, Pokemon's a big deal and there is something to it and a lot of people love it. And I kind of like it more than I like playing it. But Street Fighter 2 is the clear winner. You and I could pick that up right now and have a great time.
Oh yeah, definitely. And you bring up a good point too about the Super Nintendo version, which was the first time I think that you looked at a version on a home console and it was really close to what the arcade version was. And that was like, oh my God, I can play what was like in the arcade in my home. Amazing.
Yeah. All the fights with your Genesis friends and that was a great time to be playing video games. And that game was a seminal moment in as third party games went anyway. And it just destroyed me for months and months and months on end. And still to this day, if there's one in an old arcade or whatever, I'm happily putting quarters in that and playing it again.
Christian, are you a Pokemon fan?
So I think this is just this part of the show is called We're Old. And
well, Pokemon Red Blue is not recent. And I should also point out that we need to take into account Twitch Plays Pokemon as being a huge deal.
A big deal, yeah.
Right? And that's Pokemon, what, Red, I think?
Well, now they've moved on.
Yes.
They've moved on to Crystal, but I think it was Red originally. And that, you know, not to be underestimated.
Right. I think if we were all 10 years younger, maybe even less, Pokemon, we would all be voting for Pokemon.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I'm voting for Street Fighter 4. I told this story.
Street Fighter 4?
Street Fighter 2. I told the story on Uninformed Opinions, this show Stuart Nocht and I do. I set up a shoebox that I saved money for when the Genesis version finally came out. And as soon as I knew it was coming out, I saw it on the whiteboard at Babbage's, like a release date. I was like, what? And I taped a shoebox shut, and every dollar or quarter I got, I stuffed into that thing, trying to save up money to buy a copy of that game. It was so important to me. I loved that game. I still love Street Fighter II and all of its incarnations. But I do think that if we were younger, and I think that who wins this this battle here in March Madness, I think might show the age of our listeners as well. I think younger people, Pokemon is huge.
Contextualizing it that way, Christian. Will there be no one to speak for Pokemon? Let's see if a caller is willing to. 801, you are on the air. Will you speak for Pokemon, or is it a Street Fighter II's clean sweep?
Let me start by saying Pokemon is an absolute phenomenon. I mean, even today, there is like, we now have, I think we would have now have two generations maybe of Pokemon players. I'm like in my late 30s, but I have kids who are totally into it, and they have older cousins who are maybe in their late teens, early 20s who are totally into it. So Pokemon, like as a phenomenon, maybe not necessarily as a game, but as this enduring thing that on every handheld system keeps coming up, it's definitely on this list, I think, for a good reason. That said, Street Fighter II is amazing, and Scott is absolutely right. If you pick up Street Fighter II today, okay, GoldenEye 007, you put that in today, you probably won't have a lot of fun. You put Street Fighter II in today, and you'll have tons of fun for hours playing that thing. So I got to say Street Fighter II.
Right on, so brother. Say we all. Suck it, Pokemon. Statistics bear it out as well. 60% Street Fighter II, 40% for Pokemon.
And I hate that Christian's right about the age thing. He's totally right.
Ozzy and Nicole Z are both shedding single tears right now if they're listening to this.
All right. We have number 3 seed next, Skyrim, up against number 14 seed, Mega Man 2.
This is easy, talk right, about, Jeff? Mega Man 2.
Talk about disparate games. Well, Mega Man 2 is awesome. Awesome game. I mean, amazing. Yeah. But, you know, I'm voting Skyrim because it's sort of synonymous with my gaming tastes. I mean, there's nothing that says what I want out of video games more than Skyrim. So
yeah, it's hard for me to name a game in the modern era that has had a bigger impact than Skyrim on me. Skyrim was just a seminal moment, and I'm glad that it's still considered kind of, well, on my PC anyway, a current generation game that's still getting a lot of mod support and a lot of interesting things around it. And until we get a proper, non-MMO version of the next Elder Scrolls game, that is kind of what we've got. And I see it as one of the most important games I ever played, and I wish I had more of it. So this is not even close. And I love me some Mega Man, but I really like me some Skyrim.
I'm Mega Man 2. I think Mega Man 2 is phenomenal.
You're old.
I am old. I am very old. And I don't have time to play these games like Skyrim. I think Mega Man 2, it's, you know, an action platformer before that was a thing, right? I mean, what it refined from the already awesome Mega Man was incredible. And the way you could go about it, it was an open world game before there were open world games in the sense that, you know, you could counter, you go get any boss. Wait, same with Mega Man 1. But Mega Man 2, it holds up. Because it's sprite based still, right? It's not PlayStation 1 style graphics, and I think using arguments that I've dismissed for other competitions in this bracket, but if 20 years from now people will still enjoy playing Mega Man 2, and I don't think Skyrim will hold up.
Well, yeah, it's not a bad point to be made. Let's see what the guys on the phone have to say. 850. What do you think? Mega Man 2 or Skyrim?
Mega Man 2 for two reasons. One, the impact it had on game design long term, and I got to give the creator props for being one of the few Japanese developers that actually understands that if things don't change, Japan will be irrelevant.
Wow, that's a really good point. I mean, he's still putting out games and committed to Mega Man, and that style, that classic Mega Man style, is so playable even today. Statistically, Skyrim kicking Mega Man's butt, 65% to 31%.
That's not a bad showing, though.
Not a bad showing for Mega Man. And I, you know, I think it's kind of an unfair matchup. I really do. It's just the luck of the draw. But that happens in the madness. That's why it's madness. So Skyrim will progress, but not without a tilt of the hat to Mega Man. All right. We got two more matchups that we got to get through. Portal, the 7 seed, up against Super Metroid, the 10 seed. Wow, am I conflicted on this one. What do you think, Scott?
Oh.
It's interesting that Portal is the game that got the most votes, not Portal 2, because Portal wasn't even released as a standalone product. It came as part of the Orange Box with Half-Life 2, and
on
much
PC,
shorter.
You could get it alone.
Right. But I mean, you know, it's a much shorter, less, I would say, less substantial product than Portal 2, but
that's
it got
true.
More votes than Portal 2, probably because it's what
I think it's just
the idea.
Straight up innovation of it. Like, that thing was pretty seismic when it happened. This is kind of a hard one for me, but it's funny that the two games actually share something I like about both games, which is this feeling of isolation. Both Portal and Portal 2 and the Metroid games always had this sense of like, you are in a big structure somewhere and ain't nobody here to help you. And you're going to have to figure this stuff out. And it's very puzzly in both cases. Lots of puzzles to worry about. A little bit of action, less action in Portal, obviously. But they both have this feeling of isolation, which is one of my favorite things in games. Why I love Diablo. It's why I like games where I'm on my own. I like multiplayer games, but I like games where I'm kind of in a big, scary place and I got to figure it out and work my way through it. So they both are kind of cut from that same cloth. But if I'm to pick the one that really had the biggest impact on me, it's got to be Portal. Like, that game just insane. The aesthetic of it, the sound of it, the look of it, everything about it. It established why Valve will always be a thing to reckon with. Whether they're making games or making good business decisions one way or the other, these guys are one of those quote-unquote special game companies. And Portal, I feel like, is the most emblematic of that.
Yeah. What do you think, Christian?
Super Metroid is a masterpiece in gaming. I feel like I could
talk.
So
is Portal.
It is. Portal's great. I love Portal. I love Portal 2. Super Metroid, people are still clamoring. It was such a great game that I feel like every E3, people want a... And I love the Metroid Prime games. I think they're fantastic. But it seems like every time people are clamoring for Nintendo or someone to do another Metroid, something like Super Metroid. I mean, Metroidvania exists because of Metroid, right? Castlevania wasn't a Metroidvania before Metroid. Metroid came out and it spawned so many other great games that have, you know, used that style and going back to get to places where you couldn't get before because you've unlocked upgrades and the way you progress through the world. Super Metroid is amazing. It still looks gorgeous. It plays gorgeous. The sound is fantastic. The sound design, I should say. I don't think you want to bump that through your stereo and blast it out. But the sound design, it's eerie. It's so good. Super Metroid wins.
You're really taking the sound design of Super Metroid over the sound of Portal?
Yeah, especially considering.
I mean,
when
I love the
out.
Sound of Super Metroid, but I mean, come on. You're talking about an indelible character that will always be with us, a catchphrase that is
well,
defines
voiceover.
Gaming.
That's not sound design as much.
Well,
that's
and the sound of the portals themselves, I don't know. This is the single hardest matchup in the tournament so far for me. This is by far, I am conflicted. Looks like the chat room is the same way. These guys are going back and forth. I don't know where to come down. I'm inclined to go Super Metroid, but man, Portal it's a special experience. Funny, humorous. I remember playing Super Metroid at my friend Patrick's house when I was a kid, and it was one of those things where we didn't want to lose our progress, so we literally kept the NES on for 48 hours straight when we had a slumber party.
Okay, if you're wondering if it sounds weird all of a sudden, we had Jeff has moved recently, and I blame the merger between Time Warner Cable and Comcast. Jeff, you lost your internet, but you're here on the phone lines, right?
Yes. Thank goodness we accept live call-ins on this show. I apologize for that. This is certainly very frustrating for me, but we're going to continue on. We're almost done with our March Madness matchups. And we were talking about Super Metroid and Portal, and I was advocating for Super Metroid. I think that that's where I'm going to come down. I don't have the statistics in front of me because there's no internet connection in my home. What do you guys think? Super Metroid Portal. We have two votes from us and one vote for Portal, so I think Super Metroid's moving on. Boom.
I think so, and we'll check back when you have the internet to make this official. We don't want any hanging chads, but it looks like our gut is saying Super Metroid is moving on, and so we'll work under that assumption for now.
Yeah.
And the next matchup is Super Mario World versus God of War. Two games that have, you know, big followings.
Hey, I'm back online.
And Jeff is back online, which is good to know.
Let's do a different edit in point, and we'll way we can just avoid all this. I'm gonna get back on Skype. Can you call me again, Zach? And we'll wrap the show up pretty quick.
Good.
I hate this. Yeah, I don't know what's going on. It pops back on and then it drops me back off. All right. So where were we?
Okay. So I'll get.
Last vote?
Yeah. Here we go. Ready? The last game we have, the last two games we have here are Super Mario World and God of War. Jeff, as our caller, you get to go first. Who do you vote for?
I think this is pretty easy, and the votes are wildly in one game's favor. Super Mario World is one of the greatest games of all time. I think it's my personal favorite Super Mario Brothers of all time. I'll take it over any other game in that series. And God of War, while exciting and fun and important in its own way, I don't think it is even in the same league as Super Mario World, which is a truly special, whimsical, wonderful experience.
Yeah, I agree. Scott, and I don't want it to taint my vote here by saying that it is also the realization and the evolution of the venerable series that is the mainstay Mario games, and everything that came before it helped inform it and made it more than just, if they'd have made a platform with, like, it wasn't Mario, it was just some other new character and this was all a new property, I don't think it's got exactly the same kind of power as it does because of the legacy of Mario. And you take really great previous Mario games. The Galaxy series is insane. This is the same team. 3D Mario Land on the 3DS is insane and amazing. Same team again. I think those games helped inform what it is. And for me, my all-time favorite Mario game has always been the N64, which just really changed it. Just changed everything about 3D platformers. So I have to take that all into account. But it pushes it over the edge for me. I mean, I'd go Mario. I mean, I love God of War. I have a good time in there, but that ain't no Mario.
Yeah, I agree.
Christian, Super Mario. God of War is available on the Vita, so that's true. You.
Oh, never mind. I'm about to say that Super Mario World is one of the best Mario's ever made, right with Galaxy 2, in my opinion. But I think what makes Galaxy 2 so special is, like, you know, Scott was saying, it has this history in the way it was able to put a new spin on some classic levels and classic Mario ideas. But if God of War is on my Vita, I'm going to have to still vote for Super Mario World. It's a fantastic game, and it's awesome. And that's who should win.
All right, there you have it. The next round of the March Madness. It was so crazy madness that it destroyed my internet connection. I apologize for the technical errors in this show, guys. I will do whatever I can do to make sure that doesn't happen next week. Until then, Scott, why don't you tell us where we can find your stuff?
Sure. People are interested in things that are a lot like DLC. You can listen to The Final Score, which is available on the Frog Pants Network. You can find that at finalscoreshow.com. And it's me and my two co-hosts talking about the video games we love. We do it every Friday. And it's, I think, a great companion piece to anything else you're listening to video game related. We have a really good time on there. And if you are a fan of Blizzard and anything they do, I think The Instance is still a great destination for you. The show is nearly 8 years old, and still going strong, and we're loving it. And you can find that at theinstance.net. And for everything else I have going on in my world, just follow me on Twitter. I'm at Scott Johnson. And thank you for having me on, guys. This was a blast. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks for being here. I really appreciate it. Christian, what about you?
I'm on Twitter at Spicer. This is a busy month for me. Tuesday, tomorrow is What's New at Nerdist. Thursday is Improv versus Stand-Up at UCB Los Angeles. Then the Wednesday after that, I'm doing a great show in Venice called The Venice Underground. And then the Wednesday after that, I'm at the Irvine Improv. If you're here in Southern California, those are all going to be fantastic shows. And maybe hold off on those iTunes reviews. Stuff happens.
Tune in next week when we'll have all this sorted out and so much more. Again, you can listen live every Monday at 11 a.m. at 5by5.tv/live. You can download us at 5by5.tv/DLC. We appreciate you listening to the show. We'll have lots to talk about next week. I got to get my internet back up so I can play Titanfall and Diablo, among other things. Until that time, you can follow me on at Jeff Canada with two N's and one T. This week, at Distraub said that DLC stands for Delightful Listening for Commutes, which we appreciate very much. Thanks for calling in. Thanks for participating. Thanks for listening to our show. We'll see you next week. And until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.